Language is expression for visual people. Expression is part of the language for visual people. But for me, expression is nothing. But when it comes to emoji, I started to learn that, wow, there are so many expressions. And it's so interesting.
Hey there, this is Steph from stephfuccio.com with another episode of Geopets Language. We are traveling to Malaysia today to chat with a fan of this show. Can you believe it? We, of course, are going to talk about languages. I will tell you more about him in a minute. In one place, once a week on Thursdays, I send out a newsletter that tells you way too much about my creative process and keeps you abreast on everything I'm working on. And if you follow me on the socials, you know that I've got my hands in so many different projects. You can sign up on any of the pages at stephfuccio.com. That's S-T-E-P-H-F-U-C-C-I-O. Today is another two podcast split conversation, this time with Kaveen, a blind man who I chatted with for the Geopets podcasting show. And like what happened with the Big and White episodes, we went off into a lovely language conversation as well. So of course, that part of the conversation is right here for you. During this language chat, we cover things like accessibility for studying languages and how he uses screen readers to do that. His fascination with the evolution and history of languages, and my favorite, an entire conversation about emojis. Although we do mention a couple of language podcasts in this conversation, the majority of his podcast listening experiences and opinions and so much more will be over on Geopets Podcasting next week. You can find the links for everything that we talk about in this conversation at stephfuccio.com/Geopets Language. Let's get into that language conversation. You've made a mess of me. Can we have you just kind of introduce where you are geographically, because that is something that we touch on in the podcast, where you live, and something about you that you think the listeners should know?
Geographically, I'm from Malaysia. So there's a state here called Perak, and there's a city called Ipoh. So I'm from Ipoh, Perak, Malaysia.
You say geographically you're from there, but there's another part of that sentence. What is it?
By religion, I'm a Hindu. And here in Malaysia, we are a multicultural, multi-racial citizens. And as a Hindu, my family practicing Hindu, but recently, just 3-4 years ago, I have personally been an atheist. And I speak three languages. Tamil is the South Indian language. Malay is the Malaysian national language. And English. And as a blind person, I'm a blind person. So I've born in a 6-month premature condition. And due to the excess of oxygen, I lost my eyesight. And since then, I realized I'm a form of life, I've never seen any light perception or anything to do with vision or sight. So this condition really influenced my language and my perception towards this world. Combining with this multilingual ability to speak more than two languages really brings me closer to the beauty and diversity of language. So in Malaysia, we are a multicultural people who eats and experience and have many diverse opinions on many things.
And if I ask you anything that you don't want to answer, please just say so and we'll move to the next question.
Sure.
I respect you, Kaveen, and I do not want to offend you, but I have questions and I'm not sure how to ask them. So I don't mean any harm by when I say these things. But my knowledge of what it's like to be blind is unfortunately very limited. And most recently, I've been listening to Chanel's Language Learning Journey podcast. Have you heard of this podcast?
No, I've heard from your podcast, but haven't tried it. Yeah.
I am sending it to you because you're interested in languages, and I think you would find her story really fascinating. She's a Black American woman who is a polyglot. She already speaks about 4 or 5 languages, and she does a variety of interviews with people learning languages. And then she does like her own show where she updates on people on the multiple languages that she's learning at any given time. And what I've learned through her, which I didn't realize, is that there's different there's different levels of blindness. Like some people can see a little bit, some people can see nothing, like it's just completely dark, or there's different levels to it. And I didn't realize that. For her, she mentions that she can see general shapes, but she can't see specifics, that kind of thing. So, and I didn't realize that was a possibility. So I guess my question to you is, what level of blindness? And I'm sorry, I don't have the terminology for this, but how much can you see, if anything? Or is it, yeah, what is your vision experience?
Before I answer, I just want to make a point when you're saying just now about asking questions and the thing that I don't want to answer. But there are many reasons I opted myself to this podcast. One of it is actually to understand myself and who am I through, you know, talking to you. And the second one is to really contribute something in the point of view of a blind person on language and ideas and things like that. Because as you say, there are not much discussed on that. So yeah, blindness is just like other disability. And to put it very, very bluntly, blindness is just like gender. Now with science, we have discovered that gender is not binary. We have many combination of gender expression and sexual orientation. And I'm sorry if the idea is too radical or what, but yeah, this is the science. You know, we can't say gender is only male and female. That is a very, very raw and a very, very wrong view of gender. And that's how blindness also work. Some people have light perception. Some people have finger counting vision. So they can see, they can count fingers. And some people have a diverse amount of vision. So when we work with them or try to engage with them, we will know what kind of vision they have. They simplified it by saying, in blindness, they say B1, B2, and B3. So this is a very simplified version of understanding vision. So B1 is the complete blind. So me, I can't see anything. There is no light perception. There is nothing. So I am very, very alienated with all the concepts of vision, everything. So if people say, oh, I'm seeing darkness, I will ask, what is darkness? Because it's just like, let me give you a perspective that everyone can understand. If someone says to you about aliens, you can bring up stories of aliens that you have seen or experienced from books or films, but in a true form, you don't know what is alien and how is, yeah. So it's just the same. When people say darkness, I can bring stories from literature, podcast, and people, what they have said and what they have experienced about darkness, but I know nothing about darkness or light.
Right, right. Because you were so young when it happened, you don't have the difference between seeing then not seeing. So you don't have that direct experience.
Yes. So yeah, B1 is the total blindness. So B2 is they can see maybe up to 40 or 50%. And B3 is close to being sighted. So sighted means having a complete good vision. But they still have some kind of issues with the eyesight.
For me, to learn anything, I need to be able to read and write. I'm a very visual person. So my curiosity is, how do you learn languages? Like, is it all audio and, how do you learn languages without being able to see a text or any writing or anything like that?
You know, I know that you're intriguingly curious, but you're trying to suppress your true self. You can be yourself. You know, you can be very curious, and you can ask any questions that you think, although it is not, if you think, you can ask anything.
That is the question, though. I really don't, because I have to actually physically, not even type, I have to like write something out for it to enter my brain and stay there. So I'm, okay. But that's a learned thing. I'm sure that's a learned thing that I have done throughout my life.
Yeah, yeah. And I just, why I point out that, because sometimes when people talk to me, they have many questions, but they have this thing where it stops them from asking things. But I just want to make you more comfortable, and you can lead me to any area that you want. So yeah, how I learn is primarily my learning starts from Braille literacy. So Braille is a writing mechanism of the blind invented by Louis Braille. And this way of reading and writing is through tactile, where I do read using my fingers. So I touch it, and it is represented using dots and symbols.
because you're trilingual, what language is Braille, like a fourth language, or is Braille in Malay or in English or in, yeah?
Okay, to put it into perspective, Braille is just like Roman writing, but with dots. So when I say Roman writing, Chinese writing, or Tamil writing, so this is very, very different form of writing, right?
Right. I think a lot of people have seen Braille, like I'm thinking of like in museums or on public places, they'll have things where we could, I think a lot of people have actually seen and maybe touched Braille because it looks so different that I'm pretty tactile. I go up and look at it and I've always been curious how it works. But language wise, like, okay, American Sign Language is considered a different language because it's not just English in hand form, so to speak. That's a really, really elementary way to say it. But is Braille a different?
Okay. American Sign Language is considered different. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's considered different because it, although it speaks the same meaning, but it speaks it with a different style from the, yeah. So, okay, for Braille, we can't say Braille is a language because Braille is a form of writing. So Braille is a form of writing that have many languages. So you have, let's say, English Braille, Malay Braille, you have French Braille code, you have all sorts of Braille code because we have blind people all over the world. And for every language, they are Braille code and Braille translations.
So which language do you use Braille in?
Malay and English. So for my mother tongue, which is Tamil, there are Braille codes that they learn in South India, but I didn't learn Braille reading and writing in Tamil. If I would like to read Tamil or write Tamil, this is where the second thing come in, which is audio, as you said. So I use this thing called text-to-speech to interact and use my computer and technology. So there is this two different thing in technology, speech-to-text and text-to-speech. So when people talk about Siri or other personal assistant, it is like speech to text, but it is more advanced where you can interact with that. So speech to text is like dictation or when you do talking to your device. But text to speech is when your device talks to you when you interact with them. So let me show you. Let me show you from my computer first.
Oh, so cool. Yeah.
Okay. Because people love hearing, and I love hearing other things in podcasts besides people's voice.
Exactly, so, yeah.
Okay, let's have fun. Okay, so here in my computer, I'm using a screen reader, and it is called JAWS. And this is a commercial screen reader, but we have a free and open source screen reader called NVDA. And let me explain what is screen reader. For screen reader is a software that will interpret what is on your screen. So for example, I'm using Windows 10 here, and let me just slow down the speech because normally we use screen reader in a very fast speech. So let's say like this. Can you understand?
Whoa, no. Can you?
yeah, I can.
Wow, yeah. That's so fast.
So technically, screen reader is not a language, but I think I can say screen reader is like a language because ultimately people who can understand fast speech and this monotonic robotic way of speaking is I think their brain rewired completely when they are exposed to this because you need some kind of training. So let me just slow down this.
So
you can hear that slower thing.
Slower.
Okay, so now let me go to Notepad, for example. So
Windows R.
Okay, I'm sorry, because every application have its speed, so let me slow down. Okay, so let me type here. So I orientated with my keyboard through touch typing, where you learn when you take typing classes. So for blind, you need to learn touch typing because you can't see your keyboard. So let's say I type, hey.
Stephanie.
Oh, sorry, I think I spelled it wrongly. S-T-E-P-H-O-N...
A-N-I-E.
Oh.
A-N-I-E, yeah.
S-T-E...
It sounded right, though. Okay. S-T-E-P-H-A-N-I-E.
Ah, okay.
S-T-E-P-H-A-N-I-E.
So I can use this my cursor key to just correct it. So I can just, type and check email and read things on the internet. So it's fun. This is text-to-speech, and usually we use it on PC. So for For phone, however, let me just close this first. Okay, for phone, we use in Android and iPhones, we have a built-in screen reader. So in iPhone, they call it VoiceOver. We can activate it on accessibility settings. And in Android, we have the same, which is called TalkBack. So all this screen reader have voice, as you heard just now. And this voice is called text-to-speech, where this all the text, basically all the text on the screen will be translated into speech. And not only speech, sometimes sounds is used to communicate things. So for example, on my iPhone, let me just show you. Okay, let me just slow it down. So this is a female voice. As you can hear, it's called Samantha. Okay, so let's say I touch on an icon here on my home screen. Can you hear that?
It's very low.
It's very low? Okay, let me see.
Yeah, the volume is very low.
Don't worry. It will translate good into the recording when I will send you on iPhone. Yeah. So, okay. So let me explain to you because you can't hear that. So when it says settings, there's a slight sound there indicating that it's an icon. So when I swipe, so it says messages and how many unread messages are there, but it's a sound indicating that you're going to next icon. But when I go back to the settings and swipe again to the left, there is another sound indicating that there is no other icon there. So, okay, let's say if you translate it into speech, you'll say like, there is no icon, there is no icon, there is no icon when I swipe. But when you put it on sound, it's like tick, tick, tick. So which is faster? Which is faster and slicker? So sounds is used in screen reading to make things more efficient. So let's say by putting into words, you're making it, okay, let's say I put the screen reader into 80 words per minute and there is sound to indicate small things. Like let's say when I go in, it says going in versus giving some sound, which is better. You think sound will be better because that is more efficient, and sound is the best way to communicate something fast, rather than putting into words.
Right. Okay, so there is a lot of technology to do all of this stuff. How affordable is this stuff for anybody? Like, is it expensive or is it just very easily accessible?
Talking about affordability, for screen readers, as I said, there is a free and open source screen reader, okay, called NVDA. Maybe you can put the link on the show notes. It's accessible from nvaccess.org/download. So these people have invented their screen reader. This is in the beginning, this only two people from Australia, they invented this, but now it is a very big open source movement. And there are many people doing code. Sorry, they are doing many people are doing code contributions, and this power of free and open source community really leverage in NVDA, because in commercial screen reader you can only read in English and some other popular Western languages like French, Spanish, and things like that. So due to this vast contribution from all around the world, you have about 50 to 60 languages. This screen reader is translated too. So I can read text from Tamil, text from Mandarin, Chinese, or I can have my Chinese software to be read to me, or I can read my Chinese newspaper, or I can read my maybe Arabic text, which most of my Malay friends do here. They learn their Islamic text from Arabic books and articles and, scriptures. So yeah, this open source screen reader really changed the game to the developing world, so that when there is more languages, so that means I can access my material and my software in more languages. And It really not only changed the ecosystem of screen reading, but also the whole technology ecosystem, where I can access web from my Indian friends who write in Tamil or Hindi, This is really wonderful. So that is NVDA. And about phones, we have Android and iPhone, so iOS ecosystem. So for people who love, buying phones for cheaper prices, they can use Android. And Google is very committed toward accessibility, and they mix all their apps accessible. And the screen reading technology, which is TalkBack, built into the Android, is built in. So you don't need to download any new things, or you need to don't need to buy any new things. You know, this all this affordability is just new. It's like just 10 years down the road. Like wow. when you go back 15, 20 years, people need to buy assistive technology, which is very, very expensive. So, for example, they need to buy a note taker, which have speech, and they use that to take notes. And they need to buy, you know, some other technology to do some other stuff. But now, having this inclusive design of Android, iOS, and Windows, which have its own built-in screen reader, you don't need so much of that assistive tech products.
You had mentioned in your email that you're 25 years old. So if we go back 10 years, you're still 15 before this technology. Was it harder to study languages or even just to read or consume content before then?
When I was 15, it is around 2010. iPhone is still new, and they are screen readers into iPhone and Android. And NVDA is very new because NVDA started to be developed in 2006. So it is starting to just develop, and things are improving and being in a phase of development where you can access and read many things. So when I entered into this technology scene around 2006 or 2007, I'm only consuming English content, and most of my consumption are from US and, you know, other European countries which speaks English.
I see.
Now I can consume more global content, and you know, things are getting easier.
And did you grow up with Tamil, Malay, and English, or did you learn some of them along the way?
Let's see. My mother tongue, my primary language, which I can speak, is Tamil. Due to this technology, now I can read, write, and listen to Tamil. So for Malay, I can read, write, speak, and listen. I started learning Malay back then in primary school because I have to stay in hostel to do my primary school. So I stayed in hostel, and I mingled with Malay friends, and I learned their culture and their languages. And English, I learned through educational settings, but YouTube and podcasting really makes my English way, way better.
Do you consciously study things when you're listening to English podcasts, or you're just listening and picking up on things naturally?
Both. So let's see, you know, I do public speaking nowadays. And if you think my English is good now, it is not when I was 14. You know, I have very trouble experience when I try to communicate my ideas and things. And I exposed myself to many things like music, meditation, spirituality, science, technology, because I'm a tech person. So I listen to many people that have many ideas from diverse settings. So that experience really blend and mold my English to be a better. And when I ventured into literature, so when I started to experience classics and also literary fiction, it gives me more, you know, armor in understanding English.
I'm going to pop in here with two quick language announcements to try to help you with your language learning process. One is for German and two is for any language. So, one, German. German Uncovered. You've heard me talk about German Uncovered course before, and I'm back talking about it because it is a fantastic course. I haven't finished it yet, in full disclosure. I think I stopped at about chapter 7 or 8 when we had to leave Germany due to visa issues, not due to anything nefarious. German Uncovered is a fantastic course. The whole point of this course is that it's story-based. You've got a 20-chapter story of these teenagers going to Germany to experience the language and the culture, and there is a bit of mystery and intrigue in the story as well. You've got everything online. You've got videos that talk about the cognates to help you transfer your knowledge of English over to German. You've got videos on grammar, vocabulary, oh, and so much more. And it's so easy to get motivated by the movement of the story itself, and it kind of, honestly, even just in 7 or 8 chapters, I felt myself getting pulled into the story and forgetting the grammar and doing things perfectly and just wanting to know what happens at the end of the story. German Uncovered is the name of the course. I'll have an affiliate link for you in the show notes, as well as on stefffuccio.com/geopatslanguage. The second announcement is from Online Language Exchange, and they're going to tell you all about it themselves.
Hi, everyone. Join us at the Online Language Exchange. We host events for language learners to practice and improve their target language with native speakers. The events are well-structured, fun, friendly, and great for conversational practice. You are placed in small groups of 2 to 6 people. You speak 10 minutes of your language, 10 minutes of your target language. Then you move to a different group with new people. We usually have over 130 participants attending from all over the world, with languages including English, Spanish, French, German, Italian, Portuguese, Japanese, Arabic, Mandarin, Russian, Irish, and sometimes more, depending on who participates on the day. All levels are welcome to join. There is no admission fee, but participants can contribute if they wish. So if you're looking to practice your target language in real conversations with real people, join our online language learning community. The event takes place every Wednesday. For more information on time zones, how to connect, check out our Facebook and Insta pages at Online Language Exchange.
So hopefully these two tools will help you with your own language learning process. Now, let's get back to geeking out with language.
You continue. I really have this curious question to ask you.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I really understand you, you know, from a very language nerd person. So you see languages in many point of view. So can you just explain to me, you know, pretty quick or pretty long, it's up to you, about your language journey and, you know, like, you know, from the basic thing of how many languages you speak and how you see language and how language shapes you.
Oh, boy. I used to have a lot of language shame about being monolingual, and now I proudly wear the term language enthusiast. I love languages. I pick up what I can where I can, and I study languages depending on where I am and what I'm doing. But I am not fluent in more than one language. English is my mother. Well, let's just say it's one of my first languages and it's the one that stuck. But I have studied Spanish. I've studied Chinese. I've studied Mandarin Chinese. I have studied, I'm now currently studying German, blah, blah, blah. And I put time into it and I learned things about the languages. And I've always had conversations about language. When I used to teach language, I used to talk to my coworkers. I used to talk to my students. I always loved conversations about the nuance in language and the cultural things in language. But I'm not one of those people that's very good at picking up languages. So, yeah. So the answer to what do I speak? Unfortunately, right now, English and very choppy German. I can read Mandarin Chinese, but I can't speak it very well. My tones are horrible and my word order is out of control. But yeah, but I'm working on it. I'm interested, but I am not, and I will probably never be a polyglot. And I'm finally okay with that.
Same here. I am quite interested, you know, in language, you know, seeing it through the evolutionary lens and also understanding it in a very big cultural perspective. Because, you know, just, you know, recently Google and Microsoft announced that they are retiring the term blacklist and whitelist. They're changing it into allowed list and block list. So,
nice.
You know, all these language nuances are telling stories about human and their biases.
Yeah.
You know, for example, I love to understand, you know, although I can't speak many languages, I would like to see any writings or any research on this comparative language where, you know, how each language perceive and, you know, understands their culture and human, you know, at large.
Yes.
Because this diverse way of storing information and this technology where you can bring up, you know, sounds and speech styles, you know, in communicating is very, very unique to human, as far as I understand.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. And it's part of my frustration with linguistics is I always thought I would like studying linguistics, but I find that linguists, like many disciplines, go too far into one tiny part of a language. And I, like you, want to look at comparative language stuff more. And I'm sure there are parts of I know there's parts of linguistics that do that, but the vast majority tend to hone in on a part of a language instead of the comparative things. And the comparative things is really, really the interesting part to me.
You know, have you tried, you know, this kind of podcast, like Words to the Effect, Away with Words, you know, all this language podcasts?
Yeah, I listen to a lot of language podcasts. And different ones have different things that are good about them, for sure. But I get part of why I started the language podcast is because I wanted more of those conversations with people that experience different languages and how they maneuvered between them, what things they noticed between them, not the scientific, you know, grammatical breakdown of the languages, but their actual interactions with the languages people. And how it felt. Yeah. And I wanted more of those conversations. So,
And so I think a perspective of this blind experience, you know, a blind person's experience with the language, because I have, you know, just to give you some quick glance, you know, my experience with the language, you know, when people use emoji, I have a hard time, you know, although my screen reader speaks, you know, like, for example, you know, smiling face with a squinting eyes, you know, my screen reader says that, but it's quite complicated. I can understand that theoretically. But I can't reply for that. You know, my keyboard is very accessible. Okay. I can pick up emojis and I can do emojis, but I don't know what to reply for that. You know, it's like it stops there. You know, I can't really communicate. You know, good communication with emoji is really weak for me because it's just visual communication, although it's on words for me. Yeah. So there are many things that you know works differently. For me, as a blind individual with language.
Well, you said you're into tech. Do you code at all? Because you could make a program that fills that gap, that goes from like words to an emoji that blind people could use in response.
Okay, about my experience as a programmer, I have a very minimal coding experience. I do some basic HTML and I do some my screen reader specific scripting and I'm quite interested in accessibility space, so I read out and experience with some of this way of, you know, making software and app more accessible. And talking about this visual bridge of emojis, many now, like for example, when I type in hi, you know, there are these suggestions of waving hand emojis, many platforms are doing that, and Google have this thing called emoji search, and Windows have this thing called emoji search where you can just search, like for example, when I type happy into the emoji search bar, I will be presented with many. But the issue is not about that. The issue is about experiential thingy. For example, let me give a very bizarre experience. So what is the difference between maybe smiling face with the squinting eyes and smiling face with horns?
You know what? I am a very, I mentioned a very visual person, and I love the emojis. And when people said, oh, when somebody writes the first book all in emojis, I'm going to cry, I thought, oh no, that would be interesting. Like I don't really feel like we have to pick one way to convey what we're thinking. But I struggle with some of the emojis and what they mean. Like there's one that has a person's face, like it's just a yellow smiley face, and it has two tears coming out of the eyes. And I thought it was a sad crying emoji.
Is it something called tears of joy face?
I think so. And that's the thing. I didn't know that. I thought it was a sad thing. So when people would send it to me, I'd be like, why are you sad now? And they're like, that's because I'm laughing so hard, I'm crying.
Many, many sighted person have told me about this emoji. You know, the one thing good about us, the screen reader users, is every emoji is read out to us. And don't worry, all these emojis, for people who are listening, you can go to Emojipedia. Yeah. You know, just go Google search.
That's awesome.
To just do a Google search, typing Emojipedia, you can see all the emojis. Yeah, Stephanie is doing now. Yeah, so
I am. That's really, really cool. Yeah, but it's just what I'm saying is it's not just a sighted problem. It takes a while to learn what they are, whether you can see them or not.
Yes.
Like some of them, I think, are confusing regardless. Oh my gosh, this website is amazing.
Yes, and another good thing about emoji as a blind person for me is, you know, I just, you know, get to know that there are so much of expressions. Yeah. You know, I know that people make expression, but it is now had been made into a documentation. You know, there's so many things. you know, I can choose the skin color. I can, you know, I didn't think about all this. You know, do I understand what I'm trying to say? Like, for me, expression is just theory. Maybe I express something, but language is expression for visual people. Expression is part of the language for visual people. But for me, expression is nothing. But when it comes to emoji, I started to learn that, wow, there are so many expressions. And it's so interesting. You know, writing is an evolution of a later part of language when, you know, elite people started to make out ideas. But one of the things that writing lacks, you know, which speaking language does, is expression. You know, when fiction's coming in, people start to tell story. People may be starting to invent these punctuations, but it didn't fulfill. But when this online world boom and this emoji is being invented, I think speaking and writing are getting so... And now people are telling stories using emojis. And I think soon we will have a complete book with all emojis.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. And the thing is, whenever there's a newer way of expressing ourselves, people downplay it like it's not proper enough. It's not formal enough. It's too silly. It happens every time there's a new way of expressing ourselves. And it's just ridiculous. We don't need to pick. Every time we invent a new way to express ourselves, we can add that on to what we already use and use whichever ones we want for with it, whichever situations.
You know, I don't like to put myself in an inspirational disabled position, but being a blind person, I get to see the less of human biases. You know, sometimes things really struck me, but you know, being a blind person and being a tech person and studying literary fiction and understanding everything in the perspective of a multidisciplinary form, I am quite optimistic with everything. You know, as so far as I'm optimistic also about violence, because violence created another expression of human, you know, and it leads us back to the moment where this climate, when a pretty big climate change occurred and our species have to struggle, you know, to survive. And and this is another part of darker humanity. So what I'm trying to say is everything have its own position in this, you know, evolved and still evolving world. And I think when emoji came in, and now I'm thinking about, you know, how much expressions and life that emoji have brought about to our daily life. You know, let's say yesterday or anytime, you know, you send email. People do not send emails with emoji, but I think if they send email with emoji, I think it will be more fun. You know, I can know how you are saying this word rather than what word you are saying. So, and when this emoji is very accessible to us, you know, and there is Emojipedia, you have no excuse to struggle with emoji. Maybe you will struggle, but I think emoji is a new way of language.
It is. And have you read the book Because Internet by Gretchen McCulloch?
Oh, no.
Oh my goodness. Okay, I'm sending that to you too. She explores different aspects of internet language and she has an entire chapter on this.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's really, really cool. She also has a podcast called Lingualism with her co-host, but it's a little more, not formal linguistics, but it's a little more of the deep dive into one thing, whereas the Because Internet book that she did is just internet language, and it's so beautiful. It's funnily written, and I did it on audiobook because I love audiobooks, and it's really fun to listen to it because she's talking about internet language, which is closer to spoken language, oftentimes more than written language. So it's fun to have it in that form.
Yeah, you know, we have been this culture, you know, this global village, have seen many writers, many authors, you know, who have enhanced and break the rules of storytelling. But I don't think so there are any who breaks the rules of language, you know, like internet does.
No, well, language is to communicate. As long as they're communicating, then they're...
There are no invention of like, I'm not sure, maybe you can correct me, but there are no invention of smileys and expressions with symbols of alphabets. I'm not sure. Are there any?
I don't know if hieroglyphics counts for that. I'm not sure. I haven't really studied although I'm very interested in writing scripts, I haven't actually studied it historically. Okay. So I'm not sure. Hmm. And it could have happened and we don't have documentation of it too. So there's always that. And let's approach that question from language learning also. Are you studying any languages now, or do you have any plans in the future of adding on any other languages?
For now, I have not studied any languages, but I love to study, you know, Japanese and Chinese language. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty new into language learning, although I am quite I'm quite into language as a technology and cultural tool, but I'm new into language learning, and maybe I need your help.
Well, I have information but not skills. So
no worries.
But from I wonder if that question would work then. Like, have you started to plan any future language learning? For example, with Japanese, have you looked at any resources? Have you explored any resources for learning Japanese yet?
No. But I know quite basically, I know there is, you know, this, you know, because I know you are into this argument of many styles of learning language. I've spotted it onto your podcast, but yeah, I'm pretty new to this. So I know language is experiential and more into how practically you use it. But for now, if I like to learn language, I will use Duolingo as the app and maybe some YouTube. And also I will use this app called Goodnight, where you can communicate to many people from around the world. You know, you can talk to them and maybe improve your language skills.
I didn't know about that one. That's very cool. Goodnight is the name of it?
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't think the question I was going to ask makes sense at all. So let's round it out with this.
What you're trying to ask, this is just like to know, you know, where it's going.
Well, if you were currently studying languages, what is something that's missing? Similar to the podcasting question of this, okay. Yeah, what's missing?
So, yeah,
but you're not currently learning, so it's not really applicable. So, okay, to finish it off, if folks want to converse with you online, where is the best place for them to find you?
Twitter. So twitter.com/KAVEINTHRAN. So yeah, it's Kilo Alpha Virus Echo India November, Tango Hotel Romeo Alpha November, Kavinsran. You've made a mess of me.
Thank you so much to Kaveen for coming on and having such a wonderful conversation, both about podcasting coming out next week and about languages, which is what you just heard. He is incredibly active on the socials, so do reach out to him if you have any questions or comments on anything that he said in this conversation. I will have a link to his social media page in the show notes, so you can find it there or at stefffuccio.com/geopatslanguage. Also, thank you to Damon Castillo. The music that you've been hearing throughout this episode is his. Specifically, this song is the title track to the album. It's called Mess of Me. You can find all of Damon's information, including all of his music and when things are possible again, his tour dates, at damoncastillo.com.
Up garbage every day since I've been here with you, picking up knowledge, hauling trash to the yard, taking class at my college, very deep garbage heap. I can't sleep. You've made a mess of me. Stink. You've made a mess of me.
Mm-hmm.